Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our talk show for the morning. My name is David Inge, and we are glad to have you listening. We're also pleased to have here on the program with us once again Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He is on this program every month. It's always on a Monday, the 10 o'clock hour. And we give you the opportunity to call in with questions that have to do with home maintenance. If you've listened before, you know the kind of things that we deal with. We've talked with people who have questions about heating and cooling, about insulation, things like roofing and siding and gutters and basements and attics and doors and windows and just about anything that goes into the single-family home. So if you have a problem, you need to fix something, you're not quite sure how to go at it, thinking about making some changes, you need some advice, you call in here, and I know Hank will do his best to give you an answer. 333-9455 is the Champaign-Urbana number, and we also do have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Well, thanks very much.
Oh, good morning. Good to be here.
Lines are full, so I'm thinking I will go to the phones. I also want to make sure we got a question from a Southern Illinois listener, and it came in, I believe this came in as a fax, and we've got it, and we will talk about that. So if you're out there, hang on. We will get to your question, but I think I'd like to get to the phones here first and start with someone in Charleston. Line four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
We have moisture in the attic. I found that out when water started dripping periodically from the bathroom fans, and I went up into the attic, and I found that the fans were vented into the attic.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to some people, and I talked about venting the fans with the flexible hose, with the flexible vent.
Yes.
And I was going to question whether I should vent that into the attic vent itself that around the roof or just near it.
You can bring it up if you have these so-called button vents on the roof.
Yeah.
You can bring it up and blow it against the bottom of that, or you can run it over and down out the overhang.
Uh-huh.
Either one will work.
Great. Should I, does it make a difference in terms of the flexible hose, whether you extend it or just leave it compacted?
Not very much. If you can minimize the length of flex hose and use some solid metal duct, it will exhaust a little bit more because there's less air friction in the hose line.
Oh, okay. And one final question, if I may. How about a vapor barrier in the attic? Where would that go? On the underside of the roof or what?
It should have gone on the underside of the ceiling of the room below. In other words, under the insulation, which is not easy to do at this stage.
No, we have rock wool up there.
Yeah, so you're probably better off making sure that you have an adequate number of attic vents. I'm a little concerned as to where all this moisture is coming from. Did you have frost balls on the ends of nails and things like that up there?
Occasionally, yeah.
Your house on a basement or crawl space?
Crawl space.
Be sure that the entire dirt surface in the crawl space is covered with plastic.
Okay.
Usually when we end up with moisture problems in the attic, it comes from the crawl space.
I'll be darned.
So that's the major thing is we want to keep that crawl space dry. We don't want any water running in the vents. We don't want water soaking through the foundation.
Uh-huh.
And we want to be sure that all, and I mean 100% of the dirt surface in that crawl space is covered with plastic.
Yeah, we've got a sump pump down there.
Well, you see, a sump pump is a solution to a symptom.
Yeah.
The symptom being that water is getting in. What we want to do is keep it from getting in.
Okay.
Therefore, you should never need a sump pump.
Right. Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Champaign for the next person. Line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Okay. I have a house, stone, built around 1930, and I have two windows that I have problems with, and I guess, is it called lintel? That's above the
yeah.
the upper part of the window.
Right.
Okay. There's a it's a metal strip,
yes.
and it's corroded.
Mm-hmm.
And I only have problems in driving rains. And then it comes in. What can I do and who do I call?
Well, that metal lintel should be wire brushed, painted, and so on. What has probably happened is the metal has rusted. When metal rusts, it expands and it lifts the stone above it, and you end up with a little crack going off each corner of the window opening.
Mm-hmm.
And then you need to caulk the crack to keep water from blowing in. The best solution is not one we can apply now. It should have been applied when the thing was built. And that is to have a flashing and weep holes above the lintel to let any water that gets into the stone back out again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we do not ever want to seal the stone, because any moisture that gets in there, if you seal it, the moisture accumulates behind the seal coat, and then it freezes, and we end up popping the surface off the stones. It may help in the long run to hit the stone with a coat of a water repellent, which is can be sprayed onto the stone, which helps keep the water from soaking in to begin with. Are these lintels, or are you having the problem on first floor or second?
First floor, and they're quite corroded. I mean, they're a mess.
Yeah.
Who do I call? Everybody
just
shrugs their shoulders and walks off.
Well, try a masonry contractor.
All right.
And
they would know all the things and be able to take care of it.
I would hope they should be able to, yes.
I thank you very kindly.
All right. Thank
Bye-bye.
You for the call. Let's go to line two. This is also a caller in Champaign. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
As I recall, last month you were cautioning against synthetic stucco siding on the basis of moisture retention and damage.
Yes.
I wonder if that would apply to a detached, unheated garage as well.
It can apply to anything because water will still work its way through. Now, it may not be as much of a problem in that the garage is probably ventilated, and any moisture that gets into the wall can evaporate out through inside the garage, which it wouldn't in the case of a house.
Well, that would be kind of the situation with our garage, which is clapboard siding, and we kind of like to make it look like our natural stucco house. Basically, it's got wood frame and kind of a silvery paper color, paper type stuff stapled over the wood framing and then the clapboard siding, and we'd like to take off the clapboard siding, and we've been thinking about the stucco siding on top of that, on top of the wood framing.
Okay, as long as you don't put an interior finish on it, it won't be a problem.
So we could use synthetic stucco there.
Yes.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, and to Lafayette, this is the next caller, line three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Extending an earlier question about moisture from a crawl space affecting an attic, what would you have told the man if he had instead a regular basement in that house?
Well, I'd be looking for sources of moisture. Whether there are many ways that you can get moisture into the house. One of the more common ones when you have a basement we run into is the fact that either the water heater or the furnace is not drafting properly. And one of the byproducts of burning gas is water vapor. So therefore, if it is not drafting properly, we can end up with high humidity in the house. Basically, we are looking at this time of year to keep the moisture level in the house below the point at which we have condensation on windows.
Between sweating windows and zapping doorknobs.
That's right. That's the area we want to. We want to keep it so the doorknob and light switches don't bite back, and we want to keep condensation off the windows.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My main question is, what is the importance of polarity in electric wiring? Many plugs, of course, come with a one blade wider than the other.
Mm-hmm.
But some haven't, and I've put them in one way or the other, and it doesn't seem to matter.
Well, as long as everything is working properly and so on, it won't matter. However, there are a number of appliances. For instance, our ordinary table or floor lamp, where the neutral side is supposed to be connected to the shell, the metal shell of the lamp holder. If it goes the other way and anything shorts out, you may get zapped when you touch it. So that's the basic problem. It'll still continue to work. It just increases the danger. And there are a number of appliances that also have the case of the appliance bonded to the neutral wire because there's not supposed to be any voltage there. If it goes on the hot wire and something goes wrong, you can light up.
Amen. Well, it's rather discouraging if the polarity is all right, but perhaps one of your receptacles is wired backward.
We do find that happens periodically when we do our house inspections. That's one of the things we check for.
Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you. Our guest this morning in this part of Focus 580, Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's with us here once a month, always on a Monday in the 10 o'clock hour. We invite your questions on home improvement. Now, if you're keeping a score at home, you'll know that, in fact, he's a week early, but we're doing that because next week you're going to be at the big
National Association of Home Builders show.
Where is that?
In Las Vegas.
In Las Vegas, of course. Of course.
And I don't particularly like Las Vegas, but I do feel that it's essential I go to these at least every other year to keep up with what people are going to be doing and the new solutions that the manufacturers have come up with for old problems.
Sure. And we didn't want a whole month to go without him being here, so we said, would you come at a week early? And he said, yeah, sure he would. So we're glad to have him here. Let me take a moment here to ask this question that came in from our Southern Illinois listener by fax, because it's not unrelated to some of the things that we've been talking about here. And then we'll get back to the telephones. Apparently, we have someone here who has just moved into new construction, and they've got a problem. And here's the way they lay it out. See, the caller says, in a hallway, we have a cold air return in the ceiling, and approximately every 24 hours, we hear water streaming from this area, and it will dump about a cup or so of water on the hallway carpet. And in between, it doesn't, he says, it doesn't drip. We put insulation and styrofoam up in the cavity to try to equalize the temperature, but we're still having a problem and wants to know how to deal with that. And there's a second part here which is definitely connected to the first. He asks about whether or not it would be good to run a dehumidifier because of excess moisture. He notes that he's heard you say in the past that there could be many gallons of water in new construction, and that has to get out. And here's the important point, I think you said. He asks whether doing that would have any effect on the moisture level put out by their hot water heat. So apparently they're heating they have a gas boiler, it heats water, and they've got some kind of system to circulate it, and that's how it is they're heating the house. And you said, well, aha, that tells me something.
It tells me that register in the hallway is for the return for air conditioning. And when you have hot water heat, and I do in my house, the air conditioning outlets, both the outlets and the return, must be blocked in the wintertime to keep house air from circulating up into the ductwork that's in the attic. And when that happens, the attic, of course, is cold. The ductwork is cold. You get condensation in the ducts. I have been in houses where we dumped as much as 3 to 5 gallons of water out of the duct, usually after it started dripping through the ceiling someplace. So basically what you need to do is to close all of the air conditioning registers and the return air register in the wintertime. Now, I don't know how your system is set up. One of the more convenient ways of doing it is to put the filter in the return air grill. And, all right, how do we close that up? Very simple. Stick the filter in a plastic bag and put it back up there. And this is convenient in that you don't have to go in the attic to change the filter. It just swings down and you can replace it from down below. Not only that, as you walk down the hallway, you can look up and see how dirty the filter is and see whether you need to change it or not. So this is a beneficial thing to do. But, yes, and on new construction, there is a minimum of 1 ton and probably, if you have a poured concrete basement, up to 5 ton of water to be removed during the first 2 heating seasons. Hmm. Therefore, on new construction, I would highly recommend a dehumidifier.
Okay.
To help control this, because you remember everything that goes into this thing. The moisture comes in terms of wood, in that when you buy, quote, dry, unquote, lumber, you are buying lumber at 19% moisture content. By the end of the second heating season, it will be down to 9%. So you've got 10% of the weight of the lumber in the entire house is water that's coming out. The same way we have water in the drywall compound, in the paint, and, of course, any water that isn't used in setting the concrete. So we have lots and lots of water that first year or two. Now, you may never need the dehumidifier again. Get one on a garage sale or something. Yes, I would definitely recommend a dehumidifier, but mostly to block off all that ductwork that is used only for cooling up in the attic, because that's where your condensation is coming from.
All right. Well, we hope that that helps. Other folks, if you have questions, you give us a call, 333-9455, here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free, 800-222-9455. The next caller's here. Next person in line is in Champaign, and line one. Hello.
Hi. I have a turn-of-the-century Edwardian four-square balloon construction house. The basement was a poured concrete foundation. Now, the last two times it's rained, we've had torrential flooding on my street, and I noticed that about 6 inches from the floor of the basement, and in fact in the floor of the basement itself, some small cracks have developed, and the water will spurt up about 8 inches high in little thin streams. And I wonder if that's something I should patch or what to do about that.
Well, you can do some patching, but I would also suspect, what subdivision are you in?
I'm actually on Park Street between, right around Dr. Howard Elementary School.
Okay. Generally speaking, there is not underground pressure, so I suspect that the water that's coming in is water from your own roof, and that you may need to do some grading or extending downspouts and things like this to get the water away from the foundation.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting, because I actually don't have gutters on that side of the house where it's been coming in through the floor. But in terms of patching, what would you recommend? Would I have to expand the holes and fill them, or just fill them as is?
You'd probably fill them as is, but I would put the gutters on. You probably won't have the problem at all.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you for the call. Next is line number two in Urbana. Hello.
Hi, can you recommend any text on how to do phone wiring? I'm specifically interested in the problem of not being able to talk on two phones at once. If you have two people who want to talk with a party that you're calling, and you can't use two phones. And I don't see any instruction. There are books on electrical wiring, but nothing on how to do phone wiring right. Yeah.
Generally speaking, that's because the phone company does it. And when they put your second phone in, they should have wired it so that you could do so.
No, I'm talking about an inside phone.
Yes,
well,
so am I.
They didn't put the second phone on. The electricians did.
Well, in that case, you basically have to maintain your polarity. I'm not an expert on phone wiring. House wiring, yes, but basically you have to maintain the polarity. Remember that you are coming in with a line that has two pairs.
Mm-hmm.
And so you are hooked up, two different phone numbers are hooked up to these two pairs. Well, whether you're using two different phone lines or not, I don't know.
No. We're just talking about having one phone number.
Right.
And having some multiple extensions in the house and having two people in the house being able to talk to the person who's on the other end of the line.
Do you just get nothing, or do you get a series of clicks?
Well, in the most recent case, where we have a farmhouse in Ohio, it depends on which phone you pick up first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in one case, a new phone line that I added in with a line directly wired into the NID, the network interface device.
Right.
The new phone, if you pick it up second, it'll be on for just like 2 seconds, and then you lose the conversation. And if you pick it up in the reverse order, if I have this right, you get nothing at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I say, I suspect that somewhere along the line we've gotten the wires crossed, that we don't have the your system, as it comes from the phone company with your NID, is set up to handle two lines. So I suspect that we have some interconnection here someplace that is done with the wrong polarity. And
well, I've got the reds hooked up to the reds and the greens hooked up to the greens.
And what are you doing with the yellows?
I can't. I don't have it in front of me. I'm not sure that they... Do I have to have the yellow?
No, you don't have to, but usually it's there.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm wondering, if someplace along the line something is hooked up backward. Now, as I say, I am not an expert on phone lines.
So do you know of any place where you can find something written that tells you how to troubleshoot? Because I don't see anything published. I can't find anything on the Internet. I can't find anything when I go looking for books on wiring. There's nothing on how to do phones.
I check with your phone company.
Okay. Thanks a bunch.
Good luck.
Sorry.
Bye.
Let's go here to another caller in Urbana. This would be line three. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. I was wondering about the advisability of using a ground fault device with external outlets. I was thinking about using it with a lawnmower and, of course, the hedge trimmers and other things that we use outside that are electrical. And I was wondering if that would be more safe than just grounding.
Yes, definitely it is. As a matter of fact, ground fault circuit interrupters are required by the National Electric Code on all outdoor outlets.
Well, these are old enough that they go back before that.
I realize that. So, yeah. But it's a good idea to put them in. A ground fault circuit interrupter has a circuit built into it that compares the amount of electricity going out with the amount coming back. If there is some missing, it assumes it may be because you are across it, and it will kill the circuit before you can get a fatal shock. It will not keep you from getting a shock, but it will keep you from getting a fatal shock.
Well, that's the main thing.
And it's probably been 15 or so years ago, but I remember when we lost a faculty member at the university who clipped a cord with a hedge trimmer.
Very easy to do, and that's why I was wondering if I hadn't better retrofit.
And I would definitely put the ground fault circuit interrupter in. The way it works is the fact that in order to be fatal, an electric shock has to last about 20 thousandths of a second. These devices are capable of killing the circuit in 5 thousandths of a second. That doesn't mean your ears might not light up, but you will survive. And we think that's very important, and these devices are only about $5. Take about 5 minutes to put in. Now, when you put them in yourself, and it's perfectly within the do-it-yourself range, there are very specific instructions that come with it because there are three different ways of wiring this device. First, it can be wired so that it protects whatever is plugged into it. It can be wired so it protects not only what is plugged into it, but what is plugged into every other outlet past that point in the circuit. Or it can be wired so that it protects everything past it in the circuit, but not itself. And we find in inspection many times people have not read the instructions.
Well, I replaced one indoors, and it if you read the instructions, it did not seem terribly difficult.
It's not.
But I got to thinking that I've got three outdoor outlets, and it seemed to me that it would be advisable to protect those.
Absolutely, it is. Currently, the electric code requires ground fault circuit interrupters on all outdoor outlets, garage outlets, outlets in bathrooms, and outlets serving the kitchen counter.
And that would be in addition to grounding them, wouldn't it? I suppose those should be grounded outlets as well.
Well, they should be, but a ground fault circuit interrupter will work whether it's grounded or not.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the one difference is you cannot use that way unless it is grounded. You can't protect the other outlets downstream from it.
Oh, you can't?
No. The third wire has to be there for that to work.
I see. Well, it shouldn't be that difficult to ground these, retrofit these outlets anyway. I think they're close to water lines in...
Yeah. That
will
work.
Well, thank you for the help.
Okay, thanks. You just touched on something that I wondered about, as you say, outlets in bathrooms and kitchens, those things that are around where there is electricity and water near each other, they're supposed to have these things. And I wonder, as you go around doing inspections, how many houses you find, in fact, do have them.
Well, if you get a house that's more than 20 years old, it's fairly certain that it won't have unless somebody's put them in, because they were not commonly used at that point. And the bit of all outlets serving a kitchen counter is fairly recently. Before that, it was all outlets within 5 feet of a sink. So that we find in many cases kitchen counters on the other wall of the kitchen that aren't protected, and it's still a pretty good idea. As I say, these things, you can buy them at the local big box stores for $5 a piece, and in general, we figure your life ought to be worth a lot more than that.
Absolutely. All right. Let's go to next caller on a cell phone, line number 2. Hello.
Yes. We own a home that's on a poured concrete slab, probably built in the 50s. And recently, within the last 5 years, got a new furnace, forced air. But all the ducts evidently are probably through the slab. And we've noticed that we've got an awful amount of dust that we just can't understand why is continually recirculated as it is. Any thoughts?
Well, you might want to consider having the ducts cleaned. But it's possible that somewhere along the line that an opening has shown up in this ductwork and we're pulling some sand out of the fill underneath the slab. But that's usually sand, not dust.
Okay, and is it who do you contact to do the cleaning for ducts?
There are, if you check the Yellow Pages, you'll find several heating contractors offer that service.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, let's go over to White Heath for our next caller, line 1. Hello.
Hi, well, I was just going to ask a question about my dirty ducts, too. So,
much depends on what your situation is.
Uh-huh.
There is, generally speaking, we don't have a blanket recommendation that you have the ducts cleaned.
Oh, I see.
And there is a website on duct cleaning from the Environmental Protection Agency.
Uh-huh.
And actually, if you will call my office and leave your name and address, I'll mail you a copy of it if you don't have web access.
Oh, okay. Well, I do have web access. The people that sort of monitor our furnace system, they suggested I don't do this, but...
Well, generally speaking, in about three-fourths of the time, we don't recommend it.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So this paper that has been developed indicates when you should consider it, but definitely not always.
Okay, and tell me again, what's the website again?
I don't have the website for me. That's why I'm saying it.
I'll call your office then.
Isn't that one of the ones we have a link on our website?
I think you may. You're right. I think there may be a link on the WILL Focus 580 website.
I believe that we do. There was a couple of things that Hank said he thought people would be interested in, and so we set up links on our website. So try that. Going to our website, which is WILL.UIUC.EDU, and go to Focus 580 and look for Hank's name, and I think that it should be there.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Mm-hmm. Thank
okay,
you.
Bye.
We're a little bit past the midpoint here in this first hour of the show, and our guest is Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He is here every month. It's always a Monday, and we talk about home maintenance. And if you have questions, you can call 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. And toll-free, 800-222-9455. Our next caller is in Champaign and on line 3. Hello.
Yes, thank you. I have an older home that is heated with radiators, and I really like the radiator heat, but it's a very old boiler, and I'm wanting to replace it. And, because it's very inefficient. And I guess general information about things I should keep in mind in doing that and what a reasonable price I might expect to pay?
Well, first of all, reasonable price, I don't think it exists. secondly, is your system hot water or steam?
Hot water.
Okay. Does it have a pump?
No.
Okay. I would suggest that you replace your existing boiler with one of the new higher efficiency boilers, at least 80%, which will have a pump on it. And you can use the same piping system. You shouldn't have to change anything to go to a pumped system, which is far more efficient and more controllable. Generally speaking, we should, and I hope that whoever puts it in for you will know this, the controls on the boiler should be set that when you call for heat, both the pump and the burner start simultaneously, or essentially simultaneously, and that we not try and maintain a given temperature in the boiler. Some of them do get set so that it maintains the water in the boiler at 140 or 150 or 180 degrees. And so that when the pump starts, you get quite hot water to begin with. If you have them set up so that the thermostat controls both simultaneously, the temperature in the system will vary with the outside temperature. And you will be able to control the heat much better that way. But the new pumps don't require lubrication or anything of that sort, and generally speaking, it will come as part of the boiler package. And I am would guess that you're talking in the range of $3,000 to $5,000.
Okay. Anything else I should keep in mind?
Don't think so. As I say, it depends. You can get boilers with efficiencies as high as 92%. Depending on how well insulated your house is, it's questionable whether it's worth the extra efficiency, because there is an extra cost as you jump from 80 to 92, whether it's worth it or not. But it may be. It depends on how big a heating bill you have. So, but I would strongly suggest going with that. And this also lets you, if you have radiators in places where your wife doesn't like the looks of them anymore, you can substitute a hot water baseboard and something like that. I don't know that would take them all out, but certainly that can be done for decorative purposes.
All right. I thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. And again, we go to Urbana. This is the next person, line number two. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I live in a house where, for some reason, they have put acoustical tile on the two back rooms, and it's old enough that it's beginning to fall off. Mm-hmm. And I just wondered what the best thing to do about that is. I sort of would like to have it all taken off and the ceiling mudded, but I have an idea that's the most expensive thing I could do.
Well, it's not all that expensive because your acoustic tile, I don't know whether it's glued up or whether it is, they put down a network of one-inch lumber and then stapled it to that.
It's glued. I can tell from the one that fell off that it was glued at the four corners.
Okay. Yeah, it's a matter of getting the thing scraped off and then going back up with a layer of drywall, which we'll glue on, and have it taped, mudded.
Uh-huh.
And that would be my preference as well.
The drywall company would do that?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks so much.
Okay. All right, thank you. Let's see, we'll go next to another Urbana person, line number one.
Good morning, Hank. Mm-hmm. I have two questions. I have an unheated entryway in my house, and I was wondering whether an oil-filled electric radiator would work in there, or whether it just heats the air that's directly around it, since there's no air circulation from a heating system or anything in there.
Well, your oil-filled radiator is a radiant heater, and yes, it will heat there quite well. Many times the entryways are not heated. They're serving more as an airlock between the indoors and the outdoors, and many people don't heat them.
Okay. Do you know if they're expensive to run?
Anything that involves electric heat is relatively expensive.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do you have warm air heat elsewhere?
Yes.
You might check with a heating contractor and see whether it would be possible to run a duct out there.
Okay, thank you. And then the next question is, I'm doing some work in my bathroom, going to do some work. It's currently wallpapered, and I'm wondering what kind of paint you recommend using in bathrooms. What type of paint?
Okay, you're going to take the wallpaper off?
Yes.
Okay.
And I don't know what's under there.
All right. Generally speaking, there are a couple of bathroom paints on the market that are specifically mildew-resistant and so on. The Zinser company, Z-I-N-S-E-R, I think it is, has some special paints for bathrooms.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That is designed to resist the moisture problems that occur in them.
Uh-huh. Would they be oil-based or latex?
Latex-based.
Okay, because I would not know what's been on previously.
Yeah, no, it would be no problem. It shouldn't be any problem. And they are specifically mildew-resistant, moisture-resistant. Nearly every paint store carries some version of this.
Okay, and how many would they need, two coats?
It depends on what's underneath. Generally speaking, they're very good at stain blocking, but it depends on how good a job you do in removing the wallpaper and the wallpaper paste.
Uh-huh.
And when you remove the wallpaper, remember you've got to wash the remaining paste off the old wall.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. And we will go next to Mattoon, line number 4. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Mm-hmm. I have a question. From time to time, I find various jobs I end up needing to do around the home. I don't seem to have an adequate resource to go to that kind of guides me through what I need to do or buy, et cetera. And I know you mentioned you have a website. Do you have any recommendations as to where one might go for a site or two or a book or two that you could purchase or whatever that would aid you in various jobs?
Actually, Reader's Digest has a pretty good home maintenance and repair book out. I believe Black & Decker does also. And you probably can get some of these at, Mattoon, you've got a Home Depot. They probably have them on display there.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you, Dan.
Okay.
All right. Next caller, this would be Champagne, line number 3. Hello.
Hi. This is kind of a new construction follow-up question. Although we do not live in a new home, my son has twice visited a new home where, you know, rather inexplicably, he has had asthma problems. And, I'm talking with the allergy doctor and so forth. They said, well, it's probably something from the new construction, you know, some kind of indoor toxin or something. How long does it normally take for these things to work their way out of the home? And if we were to do something which we had considered, such as putting new kitchen cabinets in, are they likely to be made of something that's going to have similar problems with off-gassing or whatever it is?
Well, how long does it take for it to go away? It all depends on what it is.
Okay.
And what he's allergic to. But generally speaking, usually a couple of years dissipates almost anything. As far as new cabinets are concerned, if you have extreme sensitive to this sort of thing, use cabinets that are made entirely of plywood, not particle board.
Okay.
Because there will be some off-gassing for particle board, and I know that there are several cabinet companies that do have all plywood cabinets. They're about 10 to 20% premium.
But
I have priced them for new construction, where we wanted to be able to advertise that there was no darn particle board in this kitchen, and that seems to be a sales point with some people.
Okay.
And,
Countertop materials, do they have this problem?
Generally speaking, no.
Okay.
We're pretty good on that. Yes, Formica is normally solely established on a particle board base, but I have not run into any problems with that because the heat involved pretty well takes care of it.
Ah, okay. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. We have about 15 minutes left in this first hour of Focus 580. Again, our guest is Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's here every month. We talk about home improvement, home maintenance. You have questions, you can call us 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Next caller is in Southern Illinois on our line 1. Hello.
Hi, I'm back to attic venting. We put new rooms in an attic. We're still under construction. And when you do that, you lose the venting space for the attic because it's all ceiling then. My husband's using like a blue styrofoam venting system.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the correct way to go? And where do you vent that out?
Well, there are a number of things. You can put on a continuous ridge vent, which has the vent along the top or the peak of the roof, and you can vent that. We also like to have vents in the overhangs, and a means for the air to flow from the overhangs into the attic area that is outside the room that you are building. And because you're not going clear out, taking this room clear out to the eaves, I would assume.
No.
And so, yes, you can vent there. You can put vents in the gable ends, again, in the behind the knee wall, and vent that area.
Okay, that was one of our options. And you use, the other man that called earlier was using like a tube.
They were venting the bathroom vent fan.
The bathroom vent, that's where we're getting moisture too.
Okay, well, you need to run that. You can run it right through the roof and put a special cap on that.
How do you keep the cold air from coming back in then?
Well, the bathroom vent fan should have a damper in it. However, there's a couple of tricks that you can use. One is if you're using flex duct, essentially you put a trap in it. In other words, you put a loop in it, just like the plumbing trap under your sink. And cold air goes to the bottom and stays there and tends to block. The other one is an old-fashioned trick if you have any horizontal run. If you take apart a joint in the horizontal run.
Yeah, we do have one.
Okay. If you take the joint apart, take a plastic bag like you get out of the produce department of the grocery store, you cut the bottom out so we now have a plastic sleeve. Okay, you take this joint apart, you fasten one end of this plastic sleeve lid, and you extend the other one downstream in the duct and use one little piece of tape at the bottom that you hold to hold it in place. And then when the fan shuts off, the plastic bag collapses on itself and probably seals tighter than most dampers do.
Oh, really sucks it closed.
And then so that you can't get a backdraft on it, yet when the fan starts, it inflates and lets you vent.
Oh, okay.
And
you are so wonderful. Thank you. And can you also comment on the decking material that they've just been talking about they're discontinuing the form?
They're discontinuing the arsenic-based treatments and going with copper-based treatments. The main thing is everything has to be stainless steel, nails, so on, even joist hangers, because this stuff is extremely corrosive.
Mm-hmm.
And likewise, you cannot use aluminum flashings with it. You have to use either copper or stainless steel flashings because it is very corrosive.
So if we had decking put on like 15 years ago, most of that should be...
That was the old stuff. No problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for the call. That's something we talked about last time because you wanted to make sure that people really knew that mm-hmm. so that if they were thinking maybe this spring, their summer, they were going to do some kind
right.
of construction using the new material, that you have to keep in mind that all of the hardware that you're going to use has to, it's either got to be stainless or it's either got to be
triple dip, hot galvanized
so that it doesn't, because if it comes into the contact, the regular stuff, it comes into contact with this wood,
yeah.
that it very quickly, it will virtually dissolve.
In as little as a year.
Yeah. Okay.
And if you bring up my website and check under decks, the person who does my website stuff says it should be on by today.
Okay. Is that hankspeace.com?
Right.
All right.
www.hankspeace.com, mm-hmm. and you go to Dex, and that should be there.
That's spelled S-P-I-E-S, okay, like spies.
Right.
All right. Let's see, next caller here, Georgetown, line 2. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a couple of questions. I have wallpaper in the bathroom, and I was told that you want to be sure and run your vent or your I guess you call it like when you take a shower, and should run it for 15 minutes after a shower, which will help keep the wallpaper on so it won't be peeling off. Now, is the door to be shut or the door to be open? What's the best, or is there it make any difference?
Doesn't make much difference.
Okay. Okay, the other thing has to do with hot water baseboard heat we have, and it's been in the home for 40 years. It seems like we get a lot of dust with that. And I just wonder, are those, oh, if they're like little tiny fins, like I would call them, is there a way to really clean them? I'm sure they're full of dust. I mean, I've tried to wipe them off and so forth, but they're very fragile, and I don't want to poke holes in them.
Well, unless you have a type that lets you take the sheet metal front off of it, no, there's no good way of getting in there.
Okay.
And there's, the hot water heat is isn't providing a source of dust. It's just running some. The designs that they were using that long ago have since been changed so that they do less streaking on the walls. I presume that's for...
Well, no, really, it's just, you know, just the dust that you get, like, on your end tables and that kind of thing. I guess maybe I'm thinking, you know, with a forced air that you would get, you seem like you get dust with that, and I thought, oh, this will be great. There's not going to be that much dust, but... It's amazing. Maybe it's just the normal dust that you get in a home.
It is.
But I know they talk about cleaning the ducts of, you know,
yeah,
forced air furnaces and all that. And I thought, well, maybe, because, you know, we've taken off the covers to paint them and so forth when we've painted the room. And I, you know, and then I will be very careful and kind of blow out some of the dust. And I can
blow it out or vacuum it.
Yeah, I've run the vacuum on it, but very, very carefully, because I know that you could poke a hole in those and have a leak, and then you got more problems.
Well, there's no water in the fins themselves.
Oh, there isn't?
No.
Oh, okay.
So okay, you don't have to worry about those, but because the fins are attached to a pipe.
Okay.
And there's no water in the fins.
So you could use, like, your brush on those and brush
yes,
them off pretty good and should be okay.
Right.
Okay. And now, with a hot air, you know, forced furnace like that, there's basically a motor, you know, and a whole lot to it. Should that be regularly checked? You know, they say you need to get your furnace checked regularly every year or whatever. And what do they check on that?
Well, generally speaking, as far as the furnace check is concerned, they're checking to make sure that the jets on the gas and so on are open so that we're getting complete combustion. In other words, a gas flame should be about 90% blue with only a few orange tips.
Okay.
And that's one of the things they're checking.
Okay.
It depends upon the fan as to whether you need to lubricate it or not. The main thing is to keep the filters changed.
Now, we do have filters in this?
In a warm air system, you do.
Yeah, but now in this with this forced, or it's with this
hot water, no.
No, I was going to say
do
we
not.
Never have any filters, right?
Right. So basically, what you're checking there is that your flame is burning correctly in the boiler, that we don't have any of the flue passages blocked, and that the pump is oiled if it needs to be, and
okay,
this type of thing.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Cell phone caller next here, line number 4. Hello.
Hi, we will be expanding our house, and we're planning a crawl space on this expansion, and I'm concerned about moisture coming up from the ground into my windows. So what kind of vapor barrier should we call for?
You're just putting down a plastic vapor barrier, polyethylene sheet, 4 or 6 mils thick. It should cover the entire dirt surface. It should lap up the foundation walls about 4 inches or so. Lap the joints in the plastic 6 or 8 inches. They don't need to be taped, that sort of thing.
You said 4 to 6 mils thick?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Let's go next to locally here, Champaign Urbana, line number 3. Hello.
Hi, Hank. I'm wanting to try and figure out why we have a drilled well that was put in 1983, and we had even a larger pump than was necessary so that we would have really good water pressure so we could irrigate and whatnot. Over time, over the last 20 years, our water pressure has continually gotten, it's pretty low pressure right now. We're really, it's a deep well. It's 200 feet deep, and they hit water at 70. Do you have any suggestions? Are there screens that need cleaned, or
Well, it's possible if the are you still getting the pressure in the tank?
We have added on to the house, and I'm wondering if maybe we need a larger pressure tank or something. I doubt
you would need a larger pressure tank. Basically, it is possible that the screen in the bottom of the well is plugging up. It's also possible that if you're not getting the same pressure in the tank that you got before, that the pressure switch is becoming defective, that shuts the pump off too soon.
Okay, well, that's a place to start.
Right.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, we'll try to get real quick one more in Champaign. Line one, hello.
Hi, my question is about a metal farm building and excessive condensation. I'm renting this building to use for my carpentry shop, and the part that I'm going to be working in has 1-inch Thermax attached to the bottoms of the trusses. Mm-hmm. However, even when it's not raining, even when there's not tremendous variations, there's discernible condensation dripping down exactly under each and every purlin. Since I'm only leasing, I'm wondering as to a cost-efficient means just to halt this.
Is there any dirt floor in this building?
There's a dirt floor for two-thirds of it. The part that I'm using that's insulated with the Thermax is the other third with a concrete floor.
Okay. If you can, cover that dirt floor with a sheet of poly.
Okay.
And that will reduce the humidity in the building very substantially.
What about the amount of condensation, I think, eventually wrecks that Thermax on the top right now. Would it make any sense to spray foam, a light coating of foam insulation onto the bare, the bottom of the metal deck of the roof?
Yes, that will help. But basically, it's a matter of keeping the humidity down, and no, the Thermax should not deteriorate with moisture.
Okay, so the biggest thing I could do is cover the dirt.
Right.
With plastic. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Well, there we must stop because we used the time with the promise that next month Hank will come back again, and we'll do it then. Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Services with us once a month, always on a Monday at the 10 o'clock hour, talk about home maintenance. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.